Pledge first.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So I call the meeting to order. Do we have a motion to approve minutes?
A move.
Okay, did everybody get a chance to look at them?
Yes.
Any discussion? No? Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, unanimous. Okay, so we have Kelly McMullen from the Ulster County Office of Aging here today.
Hi.
Did you want to speak at all, or?
Yeah, please do.
All right. So, I don't know if you called me here because of a specific resolution that passed the MIPA resolution.
No, I think they requested that a while ago. But, you know, we do want to get a little catch up on the Office for the Aging, how things are going. And
Things are going great.
Yeah, you know, we'd rather hear from you instead of Candy. You always can.
Yeah. So things are going really great, I feel. We really made a big push to get out across the county rather than expect seniors to always come to us. So that's been a big effort. We get state federal funding for our programs, services. There's kind of a long list of those. And I could list those if you want. I did bring the basic brochure. This might help you. Pass those around. Okay. So we actually redid our brochure. We've been trying to brand ourselves a little bit. And we are targeting the senior themselves instead of the brochure being directed to caregivers around seniors. Because we really want to talk about senior empowerment. And so you'll see the services listed in there. So you know the Home Delivered Meals Program. In June of 2015, we moved to Gateway Community Industries. It's the vendor that's going very well. We surveyed the seniors twice inside one 365-year time frame from Gateway taking over, and we moved back to the hot meal option. And those surveys are very positive. And you should know generally that people who receive our services the opportunity to be surveyed at every completion of a service. So our legal services, they get the form to give us feedback. Our transportation services, they get the opportunity to give us feedback.
How many do you serve now, the number?
I couldn't tell you because so there's some overlap between the services.
No, I meant for the meals.
For the meals. We're at about 310 right now. The program has come down over the years because we are required to serve the low-income Medicare person who does not meet Medicaid qualifications. Because if you reach Medicaid insurance, you can get home-delivered meals through your Medicaid insurance. So we don't want people with Medicaid active in our home-delivered meals program. And we want people with assets and income able to support themselves otherwise to be doing that, right? So we're interested in serving the low-income Medicare person. So that brought the numbers down in terms of who we serve. The minimum amount of requirements is 600 calories a day, 5 days a week, but we can give people more. So what we're moving towards now is giving people who are food challenged, nutrition challenged, more calories versus, you know, so there's fewer people in the program.
Now, you said something about the hot meals now versus...
Yeah, so what happened was our vendor, what necessitated the change of vendor is that our old vendor, Prestige Services, announced us
you're
going to frozen, right, eliminating the daily hot. And it isn't just the food that people get in the hot meals program, it's the monitoring and the relationship they get. Think about it, if your loved one is here and you're elsewhere and there's somebody daily checking on them. So, Mike made it very clear that I needed to find a vendor who was going to be able to bring hots back. And so that's what I was
now, doing. Do they get hots 5 days a week?
Yep, they can get hots up to 5 days a week. And
or do
frozen
they have
delivery is once a week.
So they have a choice then?
Of hots or frozen? Yes.
Now, if it's frozen, you just show up once a week and give them five meals?
Correct. Five or seven. If I have money, if it looks like month to month I have money, I'm going to increase the number of meals you get. Right. So we also have a grocery bag that people get monthly with some food staple items. And now we're actually exploring a breakfast bag once a month. Give people some breakfast items. So it's Gateway's, I have to just tell you that Gateway's been a fabulous partner in this program. You know, we also provide the enhanced home delivered meal case management program, which allows us to serve the most isolated of our home delivered meals program with this extra case management service, which is really fabulous. Transitions out of hospital are a challenge for seniors. They're already on multiple medications. They go into the hospital. They're prescribed additional medications. They're unclear about which ones they should stop in terms of the regime going in. It's really important they get that first doctor's appointment afterwards. This case manager can help with that. So you'll see there are other services. Going right down there. Number six, Medicare counseling. That was the MIPA, our resolution that you guys saw in July. We did 2,100 one-on-one Medicare health insurance counseling sessions in 2015, 2,100 of them. You know, making your Medicare choices, for those of you young enough who haven't had to do it, is really complicated. And getting the right program and getting people on what's called MSP, Medicaid Savings Program, is really important. We don't want seniors leaving money on the table, and often they're not signed up for MSP, Medicaid Savings Program, which can give them a lower cost for pharmacy and a reimbursement towards a Medicare insurance coverage. So that's really important. We have 18 volunteers who do our Medicare counseling. Kim Butwell, the deputy, was a high-cap counselor in Dutchess County, and she and the coordinators, Marilyn DeWitt and Bob Meese, have done a great job at recruiting volunteers. These are retired teachers, lawyers, you know, kind of white-collar workers who wanted to kind of keep continuing to do that work, but one-on-one with people. So our Medicare counselors, there's very low turnover. They have to get trained. They have to keep their training updated regularly and annually. That's a really great program. Legal services, we have two attorneys that work in the office providing low-cost and free legal services to seniors. We book up every appointment. That's really fabulous. Home care services, that's personal care aid one and two. One is your personal being, two is your environment. People can get that through our case management service. Again, that's to target the low-income Medicare person who wouldn't otherwise be able to purchase that service. Because if it's Medicaid insurance, that can be provided by the long-term Medicaid insurance company. So we don't want you in that program if you have Medicaid. Ulcer checks. Yeah.
How do you reach out to the community to let people know about that?
I should have brought my events calendar. We do a lot of community education. There are 22 senior clubs and staying in place initiatives around the county. They meet regularly, so we get in front of them and do presentations. We do picnics, we do events. Our Lunch and Learn program on August 18th is coming up as a signature event. So we do a lot in the community to get the word out, and we make sure that we get into every area of the county doing that. So that's really important. And actually, that MIPA grant that came through, that additional $10,000, allowed us to have Eleanor Minsky get out there in the community. She attended the Big Indian Powwow. She's trying to hit cultural events, especially Asian and Indian cultural events.
Because it's tough, because I mean, some of the people I imagine who are eligible for the services, I mean, people I even know in my life,
mm-hmm.
they happen to be kind of, I don't know what, sort of shut in to begin with. You know, they're not out in the community.
We made a big effort in 2016 to reach out to faith-based agencies, figuring that they were the canaries in the coal mine, mm-hmm. because often they will see that there are two elderly people in their parish or in their congregation. One of them dies. That leaves the other one rather isolated. So we made an effort to reach out to faith-based agencies. So really, you know, it's getting out there. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Rotary. I've been to the Kiwanis. You know, faith-based agencies, just anywhere, really anybody that will take us.
Can I ask one more question? Sorry. When people are being of this age or being discharged from hospitals, mm-hmm. are you connected with the caseworkers in the hospitals, not just the Ulster County hospitals, since so many of our seniors go to...
I would like to say I'm better connected. I mean, I think that hospital discharge planners are aware of OFA services. The problem is that they might not have the details about how people qualify for our services. Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing is, for a good discharge plan, you have to have those services in place at the time of discharge. We are required to do a 36-page compass assessment which is required by the New York State Office for the Aging, before we can get you into the service. So we have to do financials in this 36-page process, which is an hour and a half, must be face-to-face in the home or in the office assessment process. So we are not going to have your services in place the day of discharge.
But even to have this in the hands of Vassar Hospital,
yes,
St. Francis, Kingston,
yes,
Ellenville, so that as people are discharged,
yeah,
they're handed this too,
mm-hmm,
and Ulster County residents.
You hope
say,
so.
Oh, this, this,
yep,
this. How,
yep,
how great.
You
will find themselves,
yep,
weeks later,
yeah,
dealing with some of the issues.
Yeah, I would tell you that most of our referrals don't come directly from, mm-hmm, hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They come mostly from family members, emergency services, doctors, neighbors. Mm-hmm. Actually, are a big resource of referrals for us.
This is a great flyer. I mean, it's very clear.
Isn't it?
It lays out a lot of. I'd like to get a bunch for my town to have them.
Oh, sure.
You know, on the.
Sure. Going to be
in
cool.
Town office. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's great.
You, yeah, we changed it to make it really senior oriented. Are you 60 and older? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Another big thing we're doing now is the Elder Abuse Prevention Task Force work. You know, we had our second annual conference in June 21st. We had the Attorney General's Office there doing Smart Seniors, which really educates seniors on financial scams. Seniors are really being targeted for financial ripoff now. And so it's really important that we get them educated about that. So we're doing, we got a grant from Lifespan, and we have to do 11 presentations by the end of September out in the public talking about our Elder Abuse Task Force and do the public education. So that's really good. We're going into senior housing complexes. By the way, that's where we go a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
We also do, like, a lot of our health promotion activities we do in libraries. Like right now we have... this is a Stanford University evidence-based practice, which takes you through 6 or 8 sessions of twice a week of meeting in a group, facilitated by a group leader. It takes you through a workbook. People on the other side of this who have a chronic disease come out with fewer hospitalizations and taking better care of themselves. It's evidence-based. So we've got Saugerties Library. We're starting chronic pain self-management September 12th. In the Kingston Library, we're doing Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, which is any chronic disease. Mm-hmm. That starts September 14th. We're going to the Ellenville Public Library for Diabetes Self-Management, because diabetes is high in Ellenville. That starts September 23rd. So we have a lot of health promotion activities that I can put wherever people want them. I just need a minimum of 6 participants. Although, frankly, the Chronic Disease Self-Management, we've been running 12, 15 people, and we've been getting 11 people to complete. That's really great to get through all those sessions and complete it. Plus, we get money back from the state for every completer that we have.
Wow, that's great.
So that's really great.
Tell them about RSVP.
Oh, so RSVP, you know, in July 2015, with legislative support, we took over the RSVP program. And so that includes the neighbor-to-neighbor transportation program, as well as a volunteer program that looks to match seniors to not-for-profit agency volunteer opportunities. We took over the neighbor-to-neighbor program, and while I have a contract with UCAT for transportation services, and I think transportation services are listed in here, and seniors can get 2 free medical trips and 1 free shopping trip per week. They have to call ahead, and the routes have to be adjusted in order to accommodate that senior. There are times when the senior is too sick, when they're getting chemotherapy, or they're getting treatments that make them vulnerable, too sick to ride the bus. So the neighbor-to-neighbor program is really great for providing seniors transportation. Since we took that over in July 2015, we have doubled the number of seniors getting transportation every month. June was 94 seniors. We've doubled the number of trips, and we've doubled the number of drivers. So this is a low-cost program with, you know, big bang for the buck. We pay volunteer drivers 39 cents a mile from their home to the senior's home to the doctor's appointment and back. Now they develop relationships. So now a senior will make his appointments based on your availability because you have a relationship. We've gotten so much feedback from seniors to say, you know, I really think this helped with my treatment. They encouraged me every day. They waited with me while I had my appointment. It's really great. And transportation is cited year after year when we do annual surveys, which we have to do. Now they're biannual. Transportation is identified as the number one concern of seniors as they age in place, especially in a big rural county, mm-hmm, like this one. And so I'm so happy that we have been able to take over that program and build that program. And in our budget, we proposed, and I hope the legislature supports, enough funding to match the growth. Because if this keeps growing like this, we're going to need more funds. and it's really a cheap program for the benefits that it provides people.
We're also able to do some things that you traditionally couldn't do with like an RSVP program.
Because, like the nursing home visit.
Because it's county dollars, it's, we have a little more flexibility.
Yeah.
Again, we'll take someone to visit their spouse in the nursing home. When normally you couldn't do that with this through the RSVP program, you weren't able to do that kind of visit.
And what you have is you have two seniors. One was the driver, one was the doctor appointment scheduler. One did this, one did that. One predeceases the other, and the other is left, right? So we had situations where people were going to nursing home. 95-year-old woman who doesn't drive anymore, her husband's now in a nursing home. We can use this program to transport her to visit her husband.
And
beautiful.
It's okay. Yes. How do you get volunteers?
Again, everywhere we go. Like, when I go out, I have a packet of information. We lay out a table. We talk about everything. We need ombudsmen to cover assisted living and nursing home facilities in Ulster County. We were able to partner with the ombudsman program, pay the ombudsman mileage, and we had six vacancies in ombuds placements in Ulster County. We got them covered. Right? So you have all this synergistic kind of effort with your programs, and you just get out there and talk about all of them all the time. It's like, this is a great program. You can work whenever you want. You can, the transportation business, you know. People go away to Florida for the month of January, February. It's okay. We know you drive in March and, you know, other months or whatever. So we do a lot. There's 400 volunteers that are working now that are placed at 39 non-for-profit agencies across the county through our OFA volunteer program. Last fall, we had our first Ulster County OFA Volunteer Recognition Program, and over 200 people attended. So this fall, it's at Diamond Mills. I'm so excited because I think that's really going to excite the seniors. So it's really great. And that's another evidence-based, statistically proven. I keep putting my backs to you guys. I'm sorry. Issue is, you know, they used to say you have to exercise to stay 10 years younger than your counterparts. Well, you can bag the exercise now. Just keep working or volunteering. So that's what I'm going to do, because I'd rather do that than exercise.
You go up and get 20.
There you go. I wish it worked like that.
I really think you should do a presentation for the whole legislature.
I would love to.
Honestly, because I'm not even on this committee. But seriously, I feel like everyone should hear about these great programs.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, we got a lot going on. And even though the brochure tells you about kind of our core programs, there's a lot that I just covered that wasn't even in here, right?
Right.
So, it's a real...
And it would be an opportunity, especially if we're at a session, to reach a broader public.
Well, everywhere I go, I say, I need you.
Yeah.
Because I'm worried about the senior I don't know.
You're a dynamic speaker.
Right?
As well.
So you guys will know about the senior that I need to know. Mm-hmm. And it's really great because we don't handle protected health information for much of what we do. We don't need to go through a big rigmarole. It's kind of like, you can give me their phone number. I can call them. You know, it's And the other thing we do, I think that's really important, is we try and answer the phone with real human beings as much as possible. We don't want that press one, press two, press three, get in the loop. And we also have an in-day case manager every day assigned. So a senior can... Right now, here's what happens. Family members come and visit. The daughter's up, the son's up. They go, oh, my God, I think things have fallen apart here a little bit. I'm worried. They can march right into the office and we'll give them a consultation. You don't even need an appointment. You might have to wait if we've got somebody else who came in. But that's how you need to be with the office for the agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got people who don't live in the area who are there to visit their parents going, oh, my God, I think there's dementia. You know? Another thing that's not in here that's really great, we're really big on partnerships, and Ulster County's a great county to partner in. I've always found that in my many years of working here. The Alzheimer's Association, which is in Poughkeepsie, they 2 days a month are in our office, and they schedule in-house consultations right in our office so people don't have to go to Poughkeepsie. The Skype portal for Social Security, when Social Security pulled out and didn't have an office anymore, we negotiated and got a Skype portal so people can use the Skype portal rather than go over to Poughkeepsie. So we're very mindful of where are the services, where do people get the information, can we get out there as much as possible, can we get volunteers out there spreading the word for us and working for us to get the word out, because you do want to cover a very large county, and we've got more and more seniors.
My main question was knowing what we know about the number of seniors we have and the ones that are living in poverty.
Yes.
Is there a way to work on reaching them? I mean, I'm just speaking to the question Tracy, legislative bedtails raised, which is those who are, you're not reaching, how do you know you're not reaching them, and especially those most in need?
So New York Connects is the arm of our business that really looks to find the Medicaid-qualified senior who might not be open to Medicaid yet. So, yes, so you talk about hospitals. Hospitals will quickly get people's Medicaid open, right? because otherwise we're going to tank on the bill. So that's a great portal for finding out that somebody's newly qualified for Medicaid. So do they know they can get in-home meals? Do they know they can get personal care aid 1 and 2 in the home, right? So Medicaid is great insurance for seniors as they age. So it's letting the community know that, and then us reaching the senior to say, okay, this is how you get there, and providing them that assistance for the getting through the Medicaid application, which, frankly, with the low poverty people, you know, literacy can be an issue. Some of the stuff for getting benefits and entitlements is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of really being able to sit down with people and help them through that process, help them organize their paperwork, their bank records, all of that. Yeah. Did that answer it?
Well, I guess I'm wondering if you were, for example, to identify where all the seniors are that you're serving, is there a demographic you're missing? I think it's the main question I'm looking for. And how could you do that?
I don't know how I would do that.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
We're now doing a human services transportation planning study that incorporates a lot of that information.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking as a planner.
Yeah, sure.
I wonder about the,
I mean, I could tell you that Woodstock has a huge, this is all relative, right? Woodstock has a high population of seniors, but most of them have means.
Right.
Right? So I do know what communities have higher or lower populations and generally where they are in terms of income.
Right.
And we'll target that way.
Yeah, that's a good time. Good time. Could be very good.
Yeah. We've been doing that work. In fact, there's a great study. Yeah. Try to inform some decisions. We know that transportation is the largest barrier. Seniors now. So we spend a lot of
time. Yes, I know we do.
I'm sure we'll get us, and then we can.
Yes. Done with the question.
Here's a the adult daycare program. Mm-hmm. Where is that?
That's always there.
Well, I mean, where is it done?
At Always There, right on.
Oh, at Always There.
Uh huh, yeah. So it's called Social. it's licensed by the Department of Health. Yes. There's a social adult daycare. There are also medical adult daycares. It's really interesting, though. There's a lot of stigma around that. So seniors don't want to get on the short bus and ride the short bus to adult daycare. So the people who are using it are mostly dementia and Alzheimer's folks. And what we have to really coach people through is, look, they're going to give you a lot of hell getting on the bus the first couple times, but once they get there and get adjusted to it generally, it'll stick. They like it. So it's underutilized, and actually I've been decreasing my contract with Always There over time because it's underutilized. I had a couple people that were using it a lot of days a week, so it looked like I was serving four people and spending $20,000, right? It was kind of crazy. So, but what's great about this, again, good partnerships in Ulster County. Susan Copenhaver, who's the CEO of Always There, said, look, I said, I'm going to cap 2 days a week. And she has grant money that she's matching the rest of the day. So she understands now that I had to cap it because it was the same families drawing down too many funds, right? And I'm like, I can put this money elsewhere. So that's what we worked out. So.
And then the other, I know the senior friendship sites, how often do they operate now?
I have seven of them,
yeah,
and they operate at different frequencies. So so some of them are 5 days, some of them are a couple days a week, and some of them are a couple days a month.
Now, how often is the Kingston one done?
Kingston is Monday, Wednesday, Fridays.
Oh, okay. That's changed from various times over the years, depending on...
Yep.
You know, it's sort of like the dynamics of the people that show up.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Like, that drives it sometimes.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, as a teacher, I know that, like, with a class, you have a dynamics of a particular class, and,
you know,
it changes totally different.
Yep.
You had the same number of people here, and, the class is totally different. Same thing with this. And you get more people because of the dynamics. So I was just curious
what
it was.
What's interesting is the state has supported us doing what's called congregate events with that money, because the numbers are falling across the state. Well, this is federal money. These programs are across the country. And the numbers are falling everywhere. So, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time and energy kind of bucking a national trend. I'm not that special. So, but what they've allowed us to do is have congregate events. So the money that would be spent at those friendship sites for higher numbers of people attending the meals, being able to move over to events, which is great. Because if you give a senior lunch, they will show up. So one thing we're doing is our lunch and learn events, which we started in January. And so I'll just give a couple of gifts. We had our attorney there talking about healthcare proxies, power of attorney, trusts, wills, advance directives. we had the ombudsman person present on being an ombudsman volunteer and how important ombudsman services are inside nursing homes and assisted living facilities. We partnered with Raising Hope United Way to find SAGE women mentors to be matched to mentees through the United Way Raising Hopes Fund. And we did a tea and offered tea, and we had 8 recruits come in to learn about the service, and all of them signed up to be mentors, which is really great. So we've been able to use the lunch and learn, the congregant money to these lunch and learn events, and we get up to 50 people to attend those, which is...
Now, when you
monthly veterans event.
Have you done anything in reference to the, you know, for people on Medicaid, most people that are, in other words, at seniors?
Do we have
I need one legislator to...
I'll go, since I'm not on the committee.
Does it have...
There is... where was I? Oh, most seniors that are on, you know, Medicaid will tend to be also disabled, you know, in certain, you know, they for various reasons. And I know there's like the Disability Rights Fund. I don't know if there's any education with dealing with that particular thing for the spend downs and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Spend down a pool trust?
Yeah, the pool trust.
Huge. So
I mean, you know, because I mean, I sort of fell on it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't realize about what was going on.
Do you have a spousal refusal?
And I helped a couple people, you know, basically helped a couple people do that. But it's not an easy task. It's, you know, it's a little complicated.
It's beyond a lot of, it's beyond.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's definitely beyond a number of people that for doing that. Because you know, I mean, you got to set up the trust fund, you got to put the money in it, and then you got to coordinate with social services to assure that they're understanding that you're getting the spend, that you're putting the spend down in a pooled trust.
Yeah.
Once it's started, the program is, I mean, it's unbelievable what you can do with it, because basically, instead of giving the poor whatever $100 a month, whatever they're giving a month for the spend down, and they're saving it for themselves. Well, mine is $20 a month and $50 a year fees, but they can use it for, I had the one person did it, and she owed all kinds of money to the nursing home, and what she did was, after building up a year, she was able to pay off that bill.
We do a lot of consultation about spend down and pooled trust, because as you can imagine, we have to monitor your closeness to reaching Medicaid if you're in our low-income Medicare programs. So as you are reaching that, we need to give you consultation and get you over to Medicaid and out of our programs, because we need to reserve those dollars for low-income Medicare who can't reach Medicaid. So we do a lot of consultation about pooled trust and spend down, and frankly, that's where a lot of seniors put the brakes on. As soon as you start talking about pooled trust, they start tapping the brakes. No, maybe I don't want to do that. It's like, well, I can't keep you in this program forever either. You're like, you kind of don't have a choice if you can qualify, but let us help you qualify. So we do a lot of that.
Please, you don't have to join the pool trust. I mean, you just take the spend down and just go right directly to social services.
Mm-hmm. If you can work that out.
Well, that's how it always is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when you get a charge for Medicaid, there is a spend down that you have, because if you make, unless you make so little, you get a spend down of some sort, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
I think my mother's spend down is $429. Mm-hmm. And I set the pool trust up for her and a friend of hers. And what she puts, in other words, that $429 instead goes every month into the disability rights pool trust. And they take $20 out every month for the fee, and then $50 out a year for
another fee.
Which is fine. They use the money for good causes. And, you know, it's basically for, you know, disabled people and helping them deal with other issues. And in other words, they, you know, also advocate, you know, on the state level and the federal level. But then they could use that money that is in that pool of trust. They could actually use it to pay a credit card. They can use it to pay another bill. They could go buy clothes on a credit card and then have it paid by the pool trust, even though it's technically part of the spend down. And otherwise, if they don't do the pool trust, the money just goes to social services. But I know there's no requirement to do a pool trust.
My you know, the level of detail on this now, I don't do these consultations myself, so my staff would be really familiar with this, so I don't want to give you an answer that's not right. I just know that we get a lot of people over into pooled trust so they can reach Medicaid. We also give people a consultation about the Medicaid spousal refusal. So I hate to see seniors spending their money down to reach Medicaid when there is an option for the more well spouse to say it's called Medicaid refusal. They should change this because it sounds so negative. But the well spouse can keep assets up to a certain level and keep cash assets and the home to a certain level, allowing the sicker spouse to qualify for Medicaid, which allows the sicker spouse to live in the home and receive, honestly, it's up to 24-hour supports in that home. Because the state doesn't want people going off into nursing homes, and they don't want the well spouse to be bankrupt, because that's the sooner that they qualify for Medicaid, and if they need nursing homes, it's really expensive. So we do a lot of consultation with couples about the spousal refusal, helping the well spouse have the sicker spouse reach Medicaid. So knowing these Medicaid programs and getting out there and providing that information, you're right, is really important.
Like I said, you know, I think the bigger point is, you know, it's about the management. I mean, I give Kelly a lot of credit. You know, Kelly's a long-term employee of the county. You know, she took on this challenge a couple of years ago and took a cut in pay. She's amazing. But she's been very good about looking at the programming and understanding how the dollars flow, really maximizing return for the county. And where in the past it might have been, you know, easier just to, you know, keep people using the programming of the Office of the Aging, she looks for those opportunities to move them into more appropriate funding so it frees up the dollars so we can serve more people. And if you look, if you were to review the annual reports over the last several years, you'll see a dramatic increase in the consultations, in the supports, and we're really, really, you know, putting resources in an area to empower seniors versus just kind of keeping the status quo we've always done it. And I'm proud of it, and it's something that, you know, if you really took a look at it, you'd be proud of that. So,
yeah. I'm happy to come back and speak to...
Yeah, I think maybe, like Tracy said, it wouldn't be a bad idea, a presentation to the entire legislature. I mean, some people are a little new to it. I mean, I've been around forever, you know, so I do know, you know, enough about it that I don't need to really ask questions. I just want, you know, like updates or something like that. But, you know, we have a significant amount of new people. But now also, not only that, it is televised, and I'm surprised how many people actually watch those televised.
Right.
I'm surprised that, you know, people actually watch that, but...
Entertainment day.
No, yep.
That's right. I've got to keep it up.
Yeah, I know. That's why, I mean, I've had to say something
to it.
But anyway, I think that would be a good avenue, you know, to get the word out.
We really can't get out enough because the more people that know a little bit, and I say everywhere I go, like, look, I don't expect you to remember a single thing I said, except that you have a friend in the Office for the Aging, and that conditions change, and they can change quickly as people age. So know that we're there. Know that we have the information we need to have. Know that we can connect you to what you need. And that's really what I want to achieve, is that people know they can walk in, get what they need, get hooked up the way they need to be hooked up.
All right, good. Thank you.
And it's age 60?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
I still have 15 years to wait. So I don't know.
We have 23.4% of the population living 60 and over.
Alrighty.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so we'll get moving along. We have the Ulster County Youth Bureau. We have Evelyn Clark.
Yes, Evelyn, we have two resolutions here, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit about the resolution.
Just a brief overview of the two of them. Okay. I don't know where this is.
That's not right.
Okay. What would you like to know about the resolution?
Well, actually, you can just close it a little bit on each of the programs.
Oh, okay. These two programs, which are run by Family of Woodstock, are certified runaway and homeless programs. They're certified by the New York State Office of Children and Family Services. So these are the two that are certified in Ulster County. The Family House program is for young people up, generally up to the age of 16, although they can take one 18-year-old with a child. And they can also, take someone who has an infant. But that program is for short-term shelter. Kids can stay there for up to 30 days in that program. If they need to stay an additional amount of time, then they have to get the approval, or I have to approve it for an extra 30 days. So the total, they can stay 60 days in that program.
Now, has the contract, these contracts changed in the amount of money, or the
state increased the amount of their amount, and it's a 60-40%. The state gives 60%, and the county has to match the 40%. The other program, Transitional Living, is for family has two houses. They call them transitional living houses, Midway 1 and 2. One is here in Kingston, and one is in Ellenville. And those houses are for youth basically between the ages of 18 and 21, up to 21. These are people who have no place else to go, so they provide them with, as it says, transitional living. They are able to stay there for... They stay there from up until they age out, actually. They can stay there for that length of time. The programs are very supportive of these youth. Some of them have no other place to go. They help them finish school. They support them when they graduate from high school. Some of them are enrolled in college. And they support them during that phase of their life, too.
How many do we have in the program?
Let's see. I did print that out.
Oh, sorry.
From last year, number... for the... Let's give you the actual numbers, I think. Didn't I bring that? I brought the amount. Well, they projected 120 mm-hmm. for the for Family House.
It's on page 16.
They can have up to, they have 12 rooms there, so they can have a mixture of male and female. They keep the kids on separate floors, and then they have the ones who are older on the main floor, like the 18-year-old. They have one room, and that one would be on the main floor with they have a person who's there 24 hours, so they have someone all night. They have one person who can sleep at night and one person who's there who stays up. So they provide emergency shelter for up to 14 runaways. And as I said, the total time they can have is up to 60 days.
Where do they go when they're...
Where do they go?
Yeah, how do they get
placed up? What happens when it's 60 days or up?
Well, they have discharge plans that they work out with them. Most of the kids end up going back home. That's what they try to discharge them to. Some will end up going to the transitional living. Some go back into their foster program. They go
Well, they always make sure that they have a plan. They don't just discharge kids without a plan. That's why they often get the extensions for an additional 30 days. If the parents aren't ready to take them back, then they have another 30 days that they're there. But they work with the families to try to get the kids back home.
Either this program in some family is the case management. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Identifying what, you know, what conflict is creating that child not to be at home, identifying, you know, those reasons, and then developing a strategy to address that problem and unify the family.
Yeah, while the kids are there, they have them.
And directed the programs that would help the situation.
Yeah.
Thank you, Evelyn.
Okay.
I'll move the two of them.
Okay. So that was both of them, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Any more discussion?
We'll both same time right now.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Evelyn. Dr. Roberts?
I'm very happy to introduce our new Vice President of Administration. After a year-long search, I really think that we did a home run here. Nguyen is his name, or Nguyen. I'm going to have it wrong for some time. I apologize for
that. That's why I didn't say it.
I think the anticipation for this fall is overwhelming. You know, we put together so many new plans and initiatives that we won't know until probably November how well they took off. We have something we just found out today. We're going to be able to do a 4-year nursing program. We have an agreement with Empire State, and they're going to bring some of their classes. They may not start the traditional time. A lot of the new projects we have are going to start different times during the semester.
Is it BSN?
BSN.
Oh, great. Okay.
So it's going to be 2+2. They're going to get 2 years with us, and we're going to recruit from the community and try to get that in groups of 12 to 24 to go through the program together. So yeah, we'll pilot, and hopefully we'll start it in the fall, if not the first thing in the spring. But we're feeling good about that. And we have our prison program. I won't say the name of the program because I'll mispronounce Sean Gunk.
Sean and Gunk.
We have people from there. I apologize for butchering that. A reporter called me and I said it, and he said, "Where is that?" I go, "So here's the problem."
Can you tell him it was South of Messibus?
South of Messibus.
But we have over 76 that are interested in that program.
Nice, very nice.
Registered. That's unbelievable. You know, we were going and hoping maybe 12, maybe 15, but we saw that number.
You mean inmates?
So you're going to do GED programs or college programs?
No, the college program. They'll get a 2-year degree.
And the state is allowing that again? They're paying for it again?
Well, the state isn't, but there is a private organization run from the city that pays their tuition.
And I know they used to do, you could have actually got a master's in prison, but it was done away with under the Pataki administration.
Yeah, and our federal program was in there too
because people had the argument was that, wait a minute, I'm paying all this money for my kid to go to college, but then when I send him to jail. But of course, they're not looking at the return, because if you look at the recidivism rate, it goes from like 75-80% down to under 20%. So I mean, that's the whole idea, isn't it? You want people not to come back, it's unfortunate that they kind of get away with that. That's why when you said that, so they still have to pick that up again.
There's the federal program came out with an early Pell Grant, and you had to apply for it. But the only institutions that got it were the ones that were already in the prisons. And we were just planning to do it, and we were fortunate to connect with a group out of the city that says we'll be in the
prison. Right. I think Bard does a program.
I taught at the Bard Woodburn program.
Well,
successful.
I taught in the jail for a while.
The maximum security prison?
Well, it's interesting. I taught back in 91. My first teaching assignment as an adjunct instructor was in prison. Mm-hmm. It was maximum security, Martin County. It was it was very, very intimidating when you first started, but after you
you were pretty quick.
Great audience, and you got a captured audience.
They really That's true. They got into the they got into the lectures, and it was quite rewarding. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, the only thing that was a little weird is when those doors slam behind you when you're in there. It's a little, you get used to it.
They handed me the keys, and I went, oh, my God.
It's a maxi.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You get locked in the room with 15 inmates, and they give you a buzz. If you have a problem, they say buzz. But if they're busy, they may not.
I just have a question, but is any inmate eligible, even if they're serving, because it's an American, people, if they're serving life without control, they have to be recommended for good behavior, good attitude, and they have to be potential. They have to be free college work done, so they've done the GED and all that, and we tested them.
And the behavior, and they also have to be have a sentence that's going to last long enough for them to finish.
That's what I was
so it's a combination. We don't do that. The agency that places them.
But not so long that they're not going to be able to really benefit from the leaving with the degree.
Well, they'll be able to finish the program as well.
Right, right.
Then when they're out, then they hopefully...
I mean, that was one of the arguments about the old program was that, I mean, there was these people that were in for, you know, like plus 50 years, and they were getting their master's degree, and you know, it's
not a good investment with their dollars.
So they couldn't get a certain number of credits and take them with them back out and come.
They could.
Okay.
They could transfer, I'm sure.
All right.
You know, as SUNY is transferable, just fine. But anyway, our enrollment, we probably won't give you a good number until somewhere later. Right now, it's about what we predicted. You know, we expected it to be down, like every other institution. So we're going to watch that closely, but we're really busting the phone, getting people out there trying to make the contact.
John's replacement, so we're not going to see you anymore, John?
John's last visit, me.
No, I have an obligation to finish the year.
Oh, okay.
31st. So the budget...
I'm not trying to get rid of you, John. I love you.
The budget and the capital, I want to see through. And Chris has welcomed me. I don't want to be in his way, but he says I'm still welcome. So on. So, you're in an awkward situation that you're a week before our board meeting, but we're going to present to the board on the budget that we're going to add to fund balance instead of a little bit. And we also attribute that to the increased enrollment in summer and some of the new partnerships. Al didn't mention we have a partnership with BOCES where they're renting space in the Kingston Center. But a combination of all these have helped us to get through the year. Making the foundation pay for some scholarships, getting the association to pay for salaries for the coaches, all help us out. So once the board sees it next week, we'll get a report to you that you'll see. And in capital, we have an ambitious program developed in conjunction with the county, which Ken was here because he was at the meetings planning it. So as partners, we're going to go out and develop $12+ million worth of capital that keeps the campus doors, windows, walkways, parking lots, everything up to par over the next 5 years. So the board's going to be passing that program next week, and then it will come to you.
Very good.
Then they're going to move two projects, the water tank and the windows for Hardinburg, to be established. So next week, at the board meeting, you're going to get a series of resolutions that have to go through the legislature.
Very good. Thank you. What is this thing for Jeffrey Smith?
It's the success story of a guy who went through the prison program.
And oh.
Turned out to be a very prominent attorney, and he's an advocate for prison A. But if you read through it, it gives his whole bio. Al's read it a few times. And, you know, everybody talks about the guards are not getting an education, our students are not getting, why are we giving it to inmates? And here's a guy who turned around and gave it back after he got killed.
Well, if you don't give it to inmates, they just return. And at $35,000 a year to keep them there, it's a no-brainer if you're able to. I'm thinking old numbers. So what's it, maybe 45 now?
Well, if you don't teach them, something positive in prison, they become better criminals.
Right.
That's
well,
what they learn in prison.
So if you, it costs you to educate them, it costs $5,000 to educate. If you just use that as a number, and you can save $45,000.
People
but I carry that around
prison.
Because I've even given that to the chancellor, and anybody who questions the prison program, I throw Jeff Smith's resume out on the street so you can see that he became a prominent lawyer and is still very active on his
career.
And you get your benefits from reading a story like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
One last note.
Okay.
I'm not a consider myself the elderly or whatever, but this was a very informational day.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Good.
I know someone who fell down on Friday who's 61 years old and can take advantage of this
and get
the physical therapy. So
that's good.
Yeah, see, I won't apply for another 15 years. So
Lee?
I know we're short on time, so I'm just going to do a couple things. Thank all of you for coming out to the opening ceremony, for those of you that were there for the Ulster County Fair. It was a banner year. They 50,591, which is a record for them, which was great. They I didn't think that was going to happen because it seemed like there weren't really heavy days, but it was slow and steady the whole time, which is really what we look for. As far as our 4-H youth and whatever, I think they had great opportunities to meet and talk with people and tell them about what they're doing. The auction went really well. The educational exhibits were really good. As far as the whole fair went, I think it really was a good experience for almost everybody. I have to say the ride company that we work with is really pretty good. The folks that work there, I've been through a lot of ride companies over the years. There were times when I would let my children out on the midway by themselves. That's not true with the group that we're working with. They're really very good. The fair is going to need to do something about taking a look at parking, especially for handicapped folks. I made a special effort to get out there myself this year, and it's not great. If you're elderly in a wheelchair or whatever, that parking lot is horrendous. Now, so, you know, it's county property. I don't know how we're going to take a look at it. I'm thinking that we really should get a parking specialist, you know, ground specialist or whatever, looking at that to make recommendations. But it's not conducive to folks coming in. And we bring in a really big senior citizen crowd on Sunday because they come in for free. If they come in before 4 o'clock. So just something that, you know, as I sit on a fair board, too, as well as these corporate extensions. So that's just one of the things that I noticed as a fair board member that really is going to need to be addressed because it's a great experience for them, but you want them to be able to come in and enjoy. The fairgrounds themselves are great because of all the blacktop, you know, and we've worked really hard on getting all the entrances to the buildings and stuff. ADA accessible and whatever, but that parking lot needs work. So I don't do that with the fair board, but if somebody hears about it or whatever, there is a great need. And there's a lot of other events that happen there at the fairgrounds now. Mm-hmm. Every weekend from April until October, there is some group using the fairgrounds for something. So it goes beyond just, you know, for what's needed for the fair. It was great. It was a great time. And
Yeah, I thought it was great. I was there for the opening ceremony and then came back and spent the day with my daughter. But I had made the suggestion, which wasn't mine, another legislator brought it up at the opening ceremony, which since you're on the board, I just wanted to say it again. About, first of all, just as an aside, why is opening day not the opening day?
Because Tuesday was a day that they added on and it's carload night.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't start until 4 o'clock. The fair doesn't open until 4. And it's specifically designed for people to come in with large groups of people, pay the one price, get them in, and get them on the ride. The folks that are coming in generally on Tuesday are not particularly interested in the animals and the,
right.
The rest of the fair experience. So that's why we don't do opening ceremonies.
Well, the suggestion that I heard from another legislator was maybe to push back the opening ceremony to right before the concert,
because I just see there's really not that many people. And it's just speaking for myself, like a legislator, I don't really care if I'm recognized at all. I'm just fine. I'm a fly on the wall. But you're recognizing kids that are getting scholarships and reminding the public that it's an agricultural fair, which that's to me the important stuff. And I think even if you had the Dairy Princess, even if you had a captive audience,
fourth thing.
It's a little more to have
I'll see what we can do. The problem is the bands that come in, you don't want to mess with their setup. Listen, I've done the opening ceremonies for 20 some odd years. And all they try to do is move us out so that they can get all of their equipment up and whatever. The couple of years that we had big crowds was when we had big bands. Charlie Daniels. Mm-hmm. And then there was another 60s band or whatever that was there. People come
early
and sit. So I know it's a hassle. We've struggled with it. I mean, as it is, I've got the guy who's doing the sound in my ear the whole time going, you know, hurry up. But maybe we can come up with something like when they're doing the meet and greet or something, because people come for that. Yeah, it's a hassle.
And it'd be nice if the kids got more public recognition and the public also realize what it's about, not just the ride.
I'll take that back. We'll see if we can come up with
it. Hector?
Great job.
Oh, sorry. Right.
Yeah, actually, I've been thinking about this since I was there on Sunday. I have so many questions that I would really rather talk with the fair board. It would just, you know, would be too much to get into now. Because I've been to the fair a few times over the years. In fact, when I worked here every year. So is there a way that we can go back and talk with the fair committee? Or
the fair board, and I don't know who they respond to. I've often said that they should be assigned a committee. Because there are county dollars that go to support.
That's right.
I don't think they do. It's usually buildings and grounds that they talk to,
right.
Because the issues that have come up in the past have been that. And I'll talk to Ken too, because
okay.
I know that there's a lot of conversations that go on between
right.
the executive's office and whatever. I've always encouraged that there should be a legislative committee that you guys go to, and if you don't go every meeting, you go every 2 or 3 months and you update folks on what's going on and whatever.
Once a year.
You guys
want
to take it on, you know,
I'm
happy to try and help make that happen, but I shouldn't be, you know.
Yeah,
you guys
need
to decide who that should be, and then we can set that up.
Yeah.
Again, it's usually buildings and grounds because it's around maintenance issues that they're.
That's a different issue, though.
They're not going to be talking
about.
No,
I wanted to go to about the budget, about certain.
Yeah,
that's. Lots of
where
things
buildings
are going
and grounds
on
is, like you said, a. You know, oh, I need a toilet.
And that's kind of where I'm going to go with this, where I've got two things, and again, that's very brief. First is just recycling in general.
Yes, that's one of them.
It's like where's Waldo of where the recycling bin actually is. There actually was one, I think I encountered one at the beginning that I saw, and then afterwards, you know, non-existent. But number two becomes, obviously, the relationship between the fair board and the fair and buildings and grounds, because there was an issue that came up that there was a need for a toilet, and buildings and grounds decided to go interpret the contract between the fair, you know, between the fair board and the county to go and determine that a toilet is considered a fixture. But if we don't have toilets at the bloody fair, this becomes a kind of a massive issue. So, I guess in the past, again, you know, things were always done, again, because it was one government, things may have been done a little bit loosey-goosey. I admit that readily, right? If they need something like a physical toilet, they just go to buildings and grounds, and buildings and grounds would just come out with a toilet and, you know, whatever, and someone would install it, whether it was buildings and grounds or whoever, right? I think the fair board still kind of assumed some of that relationship was still there like that, and I think there's now sort of, there's a new administration, clearly, at buildings and grounds. And I think that they're maybe more holding that contract like the letter of the law, so to speak. And I guess their interpretation of the contract was that a toilet was a fixture, and that all fixtures are things that that the fair board's actually responsible for installing. So basically, they told them to go. That they have to go buy a toilet. And so I don't know. No. But to a certain degree, that's anecdotal, right? That's just me hearing from one member of the board. But just in general, I just want to make sure that what that relationship is and how we're supporting the fair, because it is,
so it's
whether it's the fair board or whether it's people don't think that way. They just know it as the Ulster County Fair. That's how they know it as.
Yeah, we'll talk
to you about that. That's something that should be just...
We might make it so they kind of report to this... committees.
Yeah. Even if the interface, however, goes with buildings and grounds.
Once or twice a year, it's not a big, you know.
Yeah. Point, but the handicap bathroom in the women's room was blocked by chair on the 2 days I was there, so I wouldn't be surprised if was it blocked on Sunday.
Yes.
So it was blocked the whole week, the handicap bath, the one handicap bathroom.
So that's a problem,
Yeah.
So that's just the beginning of the list. That's why I just
want
to get into the weeds. And it's not complaints. It's also other things, questions.
So we put that under new business. So we will address that.
I think Hector, there had been stuff in the past. The relationship now with building the grounds is different. And things have got to be, no building goes up without building the grounds approval and whatever, and so we do all kinds of stuff.
Which we understand, but it's clearly that now there's a new regime.
And things are getting lost in the mix.
And I will be working on the budget proposal for cooperative extension. You'll have it before your next meeting.
Okay, great.
And the county, I got a letter that said from Ken that said that if we don't hear from you by September 30th, we'll assume you don't need any money. So I said,
don't assume that. Yeah,
Ken.
No.
Those are my favorite things.
I'll have the budget proposal.
The pig races. Best.
They're fun.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a long meeting. Thank you for your coming it out.
No problem.
Thank you.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Do you have a second?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Yeah, the